calls you'll get will be about fish. You will think they're about trade and about tourism and other things. It's going to be about fish.
A Senate committee questions the Commerce Secretary nominee. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, May 23rd. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Coast Guard Rear Admiral Ostabo outlines a ramp up in summer activity during a visit to Nome.
You're going to see our helicopters in and out of here. You're going to see our C-130s in and out of here. You're going to see Polar Star, Weishi, and Healy offshore.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Crowley, celebrating 60 years in Alaska. Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. And by the Alaska Budget Report, providing in-depth coverage of state government since 1991. On the web at akbudgetreport.com.
The Alaska Oil and Gas Association is suing over a federal decision to list certain populations of Arctic bearded seals as threatened. The trade association says there is no scientific evidence linking climate change to adverse effects on the seals. It also says that scientific data indicates the populations currently appear to be healthy. The lawsuit, filed in U.S. District Court in Fairbanks, seeks to have the listing rule set aside. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in December announced that ringed seals and bearded seals in the Arctic Ocean would join polar bears as a species listed as threatened by loss of sea ice. President Barack Obama's nominee to lead the Commerce Department, businesswoman Penny Pritzker, presented her credentials for the post before a Senate committee today. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, the panel threw questions of all stripes at her, and that's largely because of the broad jurisdiction of the department.
The Department of Commerce and its 40,000 employees deal with all sorts of seemingly unrelated issues. West Virginia Democrat Jay Rockefeller, who chairs the Commerce Committee, told Pritzker what to expect.
The Commerce Secretary is in charge of 12 different bureaus. Joy.
The always affable Rockefeller ticked off a few priorities within those 12 bureaus.
The Department of Commerce serves very different constituencies that touch all corners of our country. Remarkably different. You know, the Arctic Ocean to all kinds of fish to telecommunications and everything.
If confirmed, Pritzker will oversee the National Weather Service, the country's broadband and spectrum sales, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, cybersecurity efforts, and much more. She seems up to the test.
I attended college at Harvard and received my MBA and law degrees simultaneously from Stanford.
But Washington being Washington, people are not necessarily impressed with where you went to school.
Then I began working with my grandfather, my uncle, my cousins in the family business. In the 27 years since then, I have worked as an entrepreneur, both starting businesses from scratch and growing existing ones.
That family business is Hyatt Hotels. So Pritzker has always been wealthy, but by all accounts, she's made billions on her own through real estate development and senior housing. Her wealth drew this quip from Senator Claire McCaskill.
I think it's pretty obvious that you're not coming to this job for a paycheck.
Pritzker's business acumen drew praise from everyone on the committee. She hails from Chicago, the president's hometown. Illinois Republican Senator Mark Kirk says she will play a pivotal role in the administration, an administration that's been criticized for its iffy status in the business community.
I see her as a voice for business that the president will have to heed.
Senators peppered Pritzker with all sorts of questions, many on the airwaves the government owns and sells, many on home state issues. Senator Mark Begich says her conversations with Congress will revolve around one key issue.
The calls you'll get will be about fish. You will think they're about trade and about agreements and tourism and other things. It's going to be about fish.
The Commerce Department regulates the nation's fisheries. And later this year, Congress will need to reauthorize the Magnuson-Stevens Act. Pritzker has drawn negative press recently for two issues. One, working conditions for hotel employees. That's something Senator Maria Cantwell asked her about.
The notion of subcontracting out to keep minimum wage jobs as a way to maintain a workforce is not something you support.
No, Senator.
And as Pritzker replied, dozens of red T-shirt-clad hotel union workers nodded in disbelief. Unite Here opposes her nomination because of what it sees as mistreatment of low-wage service workers. Senator John Thune, the committee's top Republican, saved the most publicized issue for last.
Some have criticized the fact that you're a beneficiary of some offshore tax avoidance schemes and that it's hypocritical for the president to nominate cabinet members who benefited from offshore tax havens when he's criticized that practice for others.
Already, Pritzker sat stone-faced and answered earnestly.
Well, Senator, I am the beneficiary of offshore family trusts that were set up when I was a little girl. I didn't create them. I don't direct them. I don't control them.
After the hearing, Thune said there are some tax issues he still wants more answers on, but he says Pritzker handled the hearing well. The Senate is on recess next week. When it reconvenes in June, the Commerce Committee is expected to pass her on to the full Senate. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
Coast Guard Rear Admiral Thomas Ostebo is traveling to major coastal communities in Alaska this week. Kotzebue, Barrow, Dutch Harbor, and today he was in Nome, explaining how the Coast Guard will implement the United States Coast Guard Arctic Strategy that was just released this month. KNOM's Lorelei Kanin has the story.
90 billion barrels of undiscovered oil reserves and an estimated 30% of the world's undiscovered natural gas lies in the circumarctic region. With a polar ice cap 40% smaller than it was 35 years ago, the Bering Strait will become a major marine highway. 1 million adventure tourists are expected in the Arctic just this year. Things are changing. With growing traffic, development, and tourism, Coast Guard Admiral Thomas Ostebo today explained how the United States Arctic Strategy pertains to the city of Nome and the Bering Strait region. The major point Admiral Ostebo made today is that Nome and other coastal communities in northwest Alaska will see a much larger Coast Guard presence this summer.
You're going to see our helicopters in and out of here. You're going to see our C-130s in and out of here. You're going to see Polar Star, Weishi, and Healy offshore, and you're going to have a really cool, the thing I'm most excited about is bringing that 110 up here.
The 110 is a 110-foot cutter, the Mustang. It will operate out of Port Clarence, 70 miles northwest of Nome, patrolling waters while the crew tests and checks out the infrastructure in the Bering Strait region. The last time there was Coast Guard presence in this area was during the Gold Rush more than 100 years ago. And the reason for the added resources and presence is in direct response to the U.S. Arctic Strategy that Admiral Papp released last week. The document guides Admiral Ostebo's work this summer and will guide the Coast Guard's efforts for the next 10 years.
In here, it doesn't say that we're going to do this on September 1st and this on July 15th or whatever. It doesn't say that there's going to be this many millions or billions of dollars put in here. But what it does say clearly is that the United States is an Arctic nation. The nation recognizes that. Our president recognizes that. Our Congress recognizes that. And we can no longer ignore or no longer allow things to move along without U.S. involvement.
And last year, the Coast Guard selected Barrow as a forward operating location, placing two Jayhawk helicopters at Alaska's northernmost city. This summer, the Coast Guard moves those resources to Kotzebue to focus more on the Bering Strait.
The way I look at the Arctic, geopolitically, strategically, and from a transportation perspective, the Bering Strait is a key strait. It's a key part of the Arctic because everything that goes in and out of there has to go through there. Well, as I said earlier, we have a small portion of territory in the Arctic compared to some of the other nations. We have a very key piece of territory in the Bering Strait.
After his presentation, Admiral Ostebo fielded questions this morning at the Nome City Hall. The former Fish and Game Area Manager and biologist Charlie Lean made a pitch for better fisheries support. And Lean wears many hats in the community. Involved in the local emergency planning committee, he also asked for better interface with the local emergency services. With traffic increasing 118% in the Bering Strait in the past 5 years, Lean says there is expertise in Nome that can be tapped by the Coast Guard. If there's an incident, the knowledge known by area residents is crucial.
Nome is the go-to place for even the Yukon Delta communities you know, when they have an emergency, they call us to figure out what to do. And the truth is that we can respond far more quickly than Anchorage or further south. So I think that we have expertise and contacts in the region that the federal agencies will never have.
Lean says he's always happy when Admiral Ostebo visits Nome because so much is happening in this region. He says the hub communities on the coast in northern Alaska will need to work together with the Coast Guard in response to incidents that may happen in our waters. Reporting in Nome, I'm Lorelei Kinnean.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Kulik hearing focuses on the tug's fuel problems.
I've been doing this a long time. I've actually seen injectors fail by water. You might lose one. I've never lost 20.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
The U.S. Coast Guard today continued its probe of what went wrong when a Shell drill rig beached near Kodiak Island last New Year's Eve. This morning, the chief engineer of the tug Ivic, which had been towing the drilling rig Kulik before it broke its tow line, told a story of failed fuel injectors while raising unanswered questions about suspected fuel contamination. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer reports.
Under questioning by U.S. Coast Guard officials, Chief Tug Engineer Carl Brookhuis told a chilling story of engine failure that shut down the Ivic's four main engines within hours of each other. The Ivic was about 6 days out from Dutch Harbor, where it had taken on fuel under the eye of inspectors, although three samples of the fuel were taken. At the start, middle, and the end of the fuel load, there was no suspicion of anything amiss until the late hours of December 27th, when one of the tug's engines inexplicably went out. Brookhuis told the Coast Guard panel that the fuel injectors on the engines quit due to some kind of residue on the filters, eventually shutting down all four engines.
Like I said, I did find some of this jelly-like stuff, I guess you could say, and that was something new. I hadn't seen it before. I've been doing this a long time. I've actually seen injectors fail by water. You might lose one. I've never lost 20.
And are you certain as to what about the fuel caused the engines to shut down?
I'm not a scientist, but I'm telling you that I believe that it was something that was introduced to the fuel, an additive of some sort or something. I truly believe that because I've eliminated everything else.
Brookhuis said that at the time of the engine failures, every effort was taken to inspect and investigate the various components of the tug's engine system. Water in the fuel tanks or injectors was ruled out, as were faulty vents. Brookhuis said something appeared to be gumming up the fuel filters, and in retrospect, a jelly-like substance was found in the fuel tanks after the Ivic reached Kodiak. Brookhuis testified that he has not seen a report of what it could have been, although he suspects it was some kind of fuel additive. Coast Guard Commander Joshua McTaggart questioned Brookhuis further about the additive.
So any additives that would have been added to the fuel would have been from your supplier, correct?
That is correct.
Perhaps you knew there was an additive added, or could you explain that?
I found out after the fact.
Okay.
And after the fact is when I found out that there was an additive in it.
Okay. Would you share that with us, or what information you might have?
I'm not sure what it was. I do know that, you know, that's been discussed with a couple different things, but I mean, it's like I do know that there was some form of an additive in there.
Is there any further information you can give us regarding the name of the additive, the type of additive, and anything along that line?
Not off the top of my head, no. Can't give you exactly what was in it. Nobody's ever told me exactly what was in it.
Attorneys for the Ivic's shipbuilders, Edison Schwest, also questioned Brookhuis. One of them, Ken Schoolaker, told reporters later that the origin of the tug's fuel is not known, nor is the component of the alleged additive. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Last year, Paul Pozanski resigned from his position as a hearings officer for the State Department of Labor following an inquiry into his residency status. The situation was odd for a number of reasons. There was questions about whether Pozanski landed the job because of his family's political connections in Alaska, and he was being investigated by a grand jury in Pennsylvania for actions he took while he was a judge there. Now that investigation is complete, and Pozanski is facing trial for allegedly stealing cocaine that was being used as evidence in cases he presided over. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reports.
For years, Paul Pozanski handled most of the criminal cases that came through his Pennsylvania county. He even started up a drug treatment court there. But this Thursday morning, he showed up to court in a baggy suit instead of black robes, and he was charged with theft, drug possession, obstruction of law, and more. According to the grand jury report, Pozanski would frequently ask that cocaine seized in his drug cases be brought to him. When state investigators reviewed some of that evidence last year, they found that cocaine was either missing or had been tampered with. They also found Pozanski's DNA on one of the open cocaine bags. In other cases, Pozanski, in his capacity as a judge, had ordered for that evidence to be destroyed, preventing the state from examining it in this investigation. Over the years, Pozanski ordered that a number of ounces of cocaine be brought to him and then stored in his chambers. Pozanski was released on a $25,000 bond, which lets him return to Anchorage, where he now lives. His next court date is in June. Pozanski only moved to Alaska in 2012, after abruptly leaving his Pennsylvania judgeship. But his family has ties to former Lieutenant Governor Lauren Lehman and to Chuck Kopp, who briefly served as Public Safety Commissioner under Governor Sarah Palin and was a player in the Troopergate scandal. Pozanski's wife also served on the Alaska Commission of Judicial Conduct in the 1990s. Pozanski came under scrutiny in the state in December after the Department of Labor hired him for a position that was only for Alaska residents. He resigned shortly after a column in the Anchorage Daily News questioned his suitability for the position. In an email statement, the Department of Labor responded that they had completed an internal investigation into the hire of Pozanski. They determined that proper review and employment checks were not performed in that case. The department has now modified their procedures to better vet applicants. Neither Pozanski nor his lawyer returned requests for comment for this story. In Juneau, I'm Alexander Gutierrez.
The community of Fort Yukon is able to relax after days of worry as it appears the danger from flooding is mostly over. Late last night, dozens of residents watched as slabs of river ice thought to be from a once menacing ice jam 12 miles up the Yukon River passed safely below the town's levee. The ice jam had accumulated a lake of water estimated to be 7 miles wide and 30 miles long, which could have created a serious flash flood if it broke loose all of a sudden. Early Wednesday, the ice jam developed a large hole, sending more ice downriver. City Flood Coordinator Velma Carroll says she was told last night that the worst appears to be over.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Children need at least 60 minutes of physical activity each day for good health. So to help your children hit that mark, find fun ways to add more activity to their day. Go for a walk together. Sign up for events in your community. Make time to be physically active as a family. Get out and play with your kids every day. For activity ideas and tips on raising healthy kids in Alaska, visit playeveryday.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. The Alaska Energy Authority encourages you to renovate right this spring. Alaskans spend up to 50% of their income on energy. For energy-saving tips, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
A new batch of bacterial infections has again been traced to a raw milk operation on the Kenai Peninsula. In a news release today, the Alaska Section of Epidemiology said it is investigating another outbreak of Campylobacter infection associated with the consumption of raw milk. This new outbreak is associated with raw milk distributed by the same Kenai Peninsula cowshare program that was linked to a similar outbreak in February. 5 new cases of the infection have been identified to date, with 2 of the 5 people seeking medical attention. Testing by the Alaska State Public Health Laboratory identified the bacteria strain as Campylobacter. The same strain was found in cow manure obtained earlier this year at the cow share farm that distributed the raw milk. State epidemiologist Joe McLaughlin called the outbreaks an unfortunate reminder of the inherent risks associated with raw milk consumption. Homer City officials are in the early stages of creating a land use plan for the area where the Pier 1 Theater sits. The building is currently located in an area zoned for marine, commercial, and industrial use. KBBI's Ariel Van Cleve has more.
There's a finite amount of land on the Homer Spit, and city officials are aware of that. So the city council and various commissions have been trying to figure out how to get the most and best use out of each lot. And that's where the theater comes in. It's smack dab in the middle of a very attractive lot. Here's City Manager Walt Reedy.
Right now, this may look like a big open lot, but I can tell you that lot's going to get more and more valuable as time goes on. And the demand for recreation areas, parks, that demand's only going to grow. And same for marine industrial. If we don't use this for marine industrial, we're going to run out of space, and then we're going to be talking about filling tidelands and things like that to create new land. So it's incumbent on us to really think these things out and try to be smart about it.
Officials are considering changes to the RV campground in that spot and adding a Ketchumek Bay Water Trail launch site for the short term. For the long term, there have been discussions about utilizing more commercially viable options like barge mooring that's actually included in the city's capital improvement projects list. Also, Reedy and Harbormaster Brian Hawkins both mentioned during a council work session the potential for a barge haul-out facility, which wouldn't be a reality for a few more years. Reedy says the city has been in discussions with the theater board to figure out its future plans. The theater leases the building from the city for $1 each year, and there's 3 years left on the current agreement. Councilmember James Dolma mentioned he wants to get a letter to the theater board explaining that if a commercial opportunity comes up in that area, the city will take it.
They need to hear it because at some point, they're going to wake up, oh my God, nobody's ever mentioned this. So I think it should be in writing that the first priority is going to be commercial leases. You know, we like Pier 1, but maybe this isn't the best spot for them.
Councilmember David Lewis disagreed. He says that could cause alarm since there's no formal plan put together or agreed on.
I think by splitting it the way it is basically done, we can accommodate everyone. And I don't want 50,000 supporters of Pier 1 coming down here at the next meeting and picketing us, just because it may happen in 5 years.
Councilmember Beau Burgess says he would like to find a way to ultimately share the space for commercial and recreational uses.
You want a buffer between the fishing hole, you want to encourage recreational activity there. It makes sense to invite in the industrial activity elsewhere. I think in the long term, though, we want to stick with Mayor White's, probably the intention of what she's saying is that if the Port and Harbor owns that piece of property, we should have the zoned permitting, the zoned use be in keeping with that. So the other option would be to subdivide the lot, have Port and Harbor sell part of it back to the city that's going to eventually be recreational and leave it recreational.
The original intent for that lot was to expand the harbor, and Reedy says that's likely why the area was zoned marine industrial. He says there will be time for public questions and comments about the theater's future before the city moves forward with any long-term plans.
That building is an institution, and it's not just cultural. There's an economic impact there. That theater brings a lot of people to town. They come to town specifically to go to events at that theater, and they eat in the restaurants, and they drink in the bars, and they go to the galleries, and there are definitely economic impacts. I think we're always going to want to have the theater. It's just a question of, is that going to be the right location in the long term?
City Planner Rick Abood will be meeting with the Planning, Parks and Recreation, and Port and Harbor Commissions this month for comments on the land use concept. The City Council could discuss the issue again next month. In Homer, I'm Ariel Van Cleve.
It's been about a year since Ophelia, the marine debris octopus, was built by Kodiak High School art students. The sculpture, which now resides in the Alaska Sea Life Center in Seward, was constructed using items collected from Kodiak beaches. Ophelia has become a mascot for marine debris cleanup and a vivid example of how much trash is circulating in the world's oceans. But she won't be the only example for long. As KMXT's Brianna Gibbs reports, Kodiak's young artists are at it again.
Ophelia's new friend is basically made of her leftovers, or better yet, her hand-me-downs.
plastics, portions of fishing nets, and other marine debris that wasn't used on the 400-pound octopus are now scattered about the art room at Kodiak High School. For the past month, students have been using the materials to construct Kodiak's second sea-inspired sculpture, a giant salmon.
There's an aluminum armature underneath all the plastic, and that's lightweight and it's strong and it won't rust.
That's art teacher Bonnie Dillard, who said the dad of one of her students built and donated the fish's aluminum frame. Students in Dillard's art classes drilled holes in various debris items and then attached dozens of them onto sheets of chicken wire.
So this is a panel, and if you can see, so we take the wire and we put it around here, and then we just twist it around the back, like so. And this is what makes a lovely W panel.
Junior Sonia Reed Vigil said the panels, which are arranged in shades of blues, greens, and whites, were then attached to the fish's frame.
Okay, so right now I'm taking these two wires together and making them here. I want to stick it all the way through and wrap it around both of the wires to connect them, like so. What I really want to take from this is, like, I really hope it sends a message to everyone that our consumption is affecting everything and that they really think about it and they stop using so much. I've noticed that the more we do this, so, like, I keep on trying to fit as much plastic everywhere, like, because hopefully the more plastic we use, like, it'll be in here instead of out there.
The fish doesn't have a name yet, but Dillard said it's in the works.
So is that the list of names over
yes,
there?
Yes, uh-huh.
So Dory, of course.
Dory,
of
yes.
course.
We have a few wanting Dory. And then they played around with the words and came up with plash, like plastic and splash. And
Garbage.
Yeah, garbage is fun. Garbage and fish.
The salmon will remain in Kodiak and serve as a local reminder to be good stewards of the environment.
It is a piece that once you get up and start looking at it, you see items that we all use every day in our lives and maybe, hopefully, make the connection that we really need to be more aware.
Dillard said she hopes to unveil the completed sculpture on Saturday as part of the 2013 Kodiak Crab Festival. I'm Brianna Gibbs.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Lorelei Kanin in Nome, Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Ariel Van Cleve and Aaron Selbig in Homer, and Brianna Gibbs in Kodiak. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau, and Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. The Alaska Nanook Commission reminds you that harassing polar bears or taking polar bears with cubs is not only illegal, but it is not part of Native traditions. Together with their management partners at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Alaska Nanook Commission has been working on developing a long-term polar bear deterrence plan to protect Alaska's villages from dangerous polar bear encounters. More at thealaskananookcommission.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Nanook Commission, Alaska's people managing Alaska's resources. As an active senior, your independence is important to you. One of the ways for you to maintain your independence is to reduce your risk of falling. A fall risk assessment can be part of your initial or annual Medicare exam. They'll ask about your vision and review your medications for possible problems. Learn ways to improve balance, strengthen muscles, and reduce hazards at home. Contact your Medicare provider for an appointment. This message in good health is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.